Today's episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Are you happy because you win, or do you win because you're happy? At only 2.6 carbs and 95 calories, it's only worth it if you enjoy it. Stay tuned for the Ultra Player of the Week before the end of this episode.
You are Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
It is Locked On Jazz for the 25th of February. That was not the Lakers, but that was still sweet. The Jazz doing remarkable things. Explaining the Jazz season via shot clock data. It's quite a story. And a Twitter mailbag Thursday. It's all coming up on today's edition of Locked On Jazz. Pow! How are you? I'm David Locke, radio voice of the Utah Jazz, Jazz NBA insider. This is Locked On Jazz, your daily podcast on the Utah Jazz, giving you insight, expertise, geeky numbers, and hopefully making it way better to be a Jazz fan each and every day. Jazz blow out the Lakers last night. Jazz moved to 26-6. Jazz have a five-game lead in the loss column in front of the Lakers. Jazz seem to be walking toward the number one seed more and more every day. The Clippers, they have the tiebreaker. The second half season's been released. We don't play the Clippers again. So we really have a five-game lead on the Clippers as well. The Jazz are the only team in the NBA in single-digit losses, and they have six. Everybody else has at least 10. It's really remarkable what we're watching. It's historic. The Jazz have now won 22 of 24. They've won 20 of those by double digits. That's never been done before in NBA history. The Jazz have won. They have hit 50 threes in two games. That's evidently like not been done before in NBA history. It just kind of keeps going and going and going on a nightly basis. And last night was equally as remarkable as any of the others when you consider that the Jazz did not get a big night out of Donovan Mitchell. Now, the Lakers were not the Lakers last night. Let's not get ourselves too excited about this and kind of misguide ourselves. You just aren't capable of beating the Jazz right now if you're coming with a major weakness or you're depleted. Like, it should be part of the COVID protocol that if you're shorthanded, you don't have to play the Jazz. They're bringing too much. So when we did the prep yesterday on the show and we talked about how the Lakers were in the first percentile, not like number one, like in the first of 100 percentile, in other words, the worst, when LeBron leaves the game without Anthony Davis and without Dennis Schroeder, like, there's just no way. The first time it happened, they actually got through it. They were minus one. And then the next time it happened, LeBron left the floor, they were minus five, and the game was over. And now it turns out that in the middle section, when the Jazz go to this like bench unit, he says in quotes, that includes Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert, it's just illegal. You know, the Jazz are playing this middle group that's Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, usually Joe Ingles, Jordan Clarkson, and George Niang. They shoot like over half their shots as threes, and they're playing second teams with Mike Conley and Rudy Gobert on the floor together. It's ridiculous. Last night when they did that, they were plus 11 in a tiny span. I think it came out to be about 6 minutes of basketball. They were plus 11. Like, put that in perspective, that's plus 88 for a game. It's crazy. Now, what was interesting last night, by the way, is that they matched Royce O'Neal generally with LeBron James. And so last night, the Jazz opened the fourth quarter with Mike Conley, Royce O'Neal, Jordan Clarkson, George Niang, and Rudy Gobert. And that five-man lineup had not played any minutes together all year. Now, we've been the healthiest team in the league with limited COVID protocol problems as well as, you know, just pretty good health. Conley Donovan missed a few. Like, we just really, Joe's missed a few, but we haven't had anything big like Anthony Davis and Dennis Schroeder being out. So we haven't had to change our lineups much. But what's pretty interesting there is the versatility that this team has, that here, because of LeBron, they threw out a lineup they've never had before on the floor. And when they put that out on the floor for the first time, it succeeded. These guys just understand how they're playing. They're so connected right now that even a group that's never played together was fine. The Jazz led by 20 last night. It's the 20th time in 32 games that they've led by 20. The story to me last night, well, there were a bunch of them. I mean, again, my story really last night is just, if you have a weakness and you're in any way, shape, or form inferior and you come into the building right now, it's going to be a bad moment. You know, if you don't have it all dialed in right now, the Jazz are going to get you. The other one was last night reminded me a little bit of when the Jazz were the elite defensive team in the league. I think they probably have moved to number one on cleaning the glass, non-blowout time after last night. But the Lakers came in last night with, you know, a depleted crew, and the Jazz had their sixth best defensive night of the year. The Jazz have offense. We're like just playing offense defense. I mean, it's crazy. You go back to the Philadelphia game, second best offensive game of the year, one of our worst defensive games. Flip it around for the first game against the Clippers. Second game against Clippers turned out to be one of our worst defensive games of the year and not a very good offensive game. Charlotte, we were only okay defensively or great offensively. Last night, we were great offensively and great defensively. Like, oh, okay. Fifth best offensive game of the year last night, sixth best defensive game of the year. But the defense last night was stifling against a team that just didn't have the firepower. And that actually kind of reminds me of some of the times when, over the last few years, when the Jazz defense was really elite, you'd go into games and it was just a question of whether, you know, could we get enough offense? We certainly can get enough offense now. There's no question on that. But it did just feel as though we had such firepower. The defensive ratings last night, we were actually better last night with Faves on the floor defensively than Rudy, so give Derek credit. We always talk about it the other way. Defensive rating last night with Derek on the floor was a 71. With Rudy, was a 104. They matched LeBron to Rudy much of that. Their offensive rating was a 96.3 when LeBron was on the floor. That's pretty awesome work on the Jazz end, scouting, preparing, because I don't care who LeBron's playing with, he's still LeBron. Donovan Mitchell, I tweeted out after the game, the thing that's not being talked enough about the Jazz is how much better Rudy and Donovan are as players. Donovan goes 4 of 16 last night and has a tremendous impact on the game. 10 rebounds, 8 assists, 2 steals. I don't know that he could have done that in the past. I asked him yesterday, how are you better? And he talked about the game slowing down and the reads, and that was really clear last night. Like, he's a much, much better player than he was, a while back. A year ago, 2 years ago. It's what you do. I'll never forget, like, Kevin McHale, when he was coaching Houston, someone asked him about, like, Derek Favors' growth, which was actually kind of limited at the time, but it was a storyline we were all on. And Kevin McHale kind of looked at whoever asked the question and said, you know, if you don't get better, you go home. Now, certainly for Donovan, it's not a question if you don't get better, you go home, because Donovan's great, but Donovan is right taking himself to another level as a player and getting better. And so is Rudy. Rudy's defense is all over the place, consistent and rolling. One other note before I really want to dig in, I did a neat project to kind of explain what's going on with the team. We'll do that in a second. The shot clock tells the story. It's pretty fascinating. And you'd only get it on Locked On Jazz. But I did want to just comment. It was clear Mike Conley really bummed out that he didn't make the All-Star team. He was great last night. He's such a team player. He's such a good guy. But I think he was really disappointed. you know, he made a crack. I think it's a good point. Like, what do we have to do? Do we have to go 31-0 to get three All-Stars? I mean, they're really dominant. They're really way better than anyone else in the NBA. It does seem reasonable that you would reward someone for something other than just points scored. I mean, Devin Booker's terrific. And so I don't think anyone out there is going to quibble that Devin Booker got the spot instead of Mike Conley. But, you know, on the other end, the Jazz, in a span of 32 games, are 5.5 games better than the Suns. Like, it's not close. Suns have won, like, 8 of 10, and they've lost a game in the standings to us. So I do think there's a pretty decent gripe in the sense of how dominating the Jazz are. Like, I'd be curious how many times in NBA history, you know, there's a team that 30 games into the season is three or four games ahead of everyone else in the loss column. Like, I don't think this has happened that often. This is, you know, one team's winning 81% of the games and the next best team's winning 69.7. This is a pretty big margin of difference between teams. Today's show is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the Ultra Player of the Week. The poll is out. You can vote. It's funny, if you read Andy Larson's triple team, it would tell you that you have to have joy before you win, not that winning creates joy. Who knows? But the Jazz last year at this time seemingly having tumultuous times in the locker room, and now the most together team ever. So it does seem as though joy, happiness, enjoyment, bringing together themselves, that's lead to the success of the team. It's all brought to you by Michelob Ultra. Michelob Ultra, brings you the player of the week. We'll see what the poll says early on. Who brought you the most joy this week? Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, Joe Ingles, or Donovan Mitchell? I actually meant to have George Niang on the poll. I'm going to have to redo the poll. I meant to have George. In fact, we're going to delete the poll and redo it because Mike Conley's winning, but it was supposed to have George Niang on the list. So we will redo the poll. And if you now, listening to the show, go to this, you can get it. Mike Conley, the sympathetic vote for Mike Conley, or whether it's going to be the three-point shooting of George Niang. Mine is George Niang. But I did. I blew it. I blew the Michelob Ultra poll today. All right. So we'll have that fixed. I just fixed it right now. And we'll see who's winning on that end things. Today's show is also brought to you by Rock Auto. Go to rockauto.com and see the difference that you can get as a customer with rockauto.com. First off, all the prices are the same, whether you're a do-it-yourselfer or a professional. They're not gouging you on prices. Second, you have the best selection you can get because it's all on the web and it's right there in a unique and remarkably easy to navigate old school website. You quickly see all the parts available for your vehicle and choose the brand specifications and prices you prefer. And if you do a little cross shopping, you'll be stunned at how much cheaper things are at Rock Auto. The example they've given us, the fuel pump assembly and advanced auto parts for a Honda Odyssey minivan is $354. At Rock Auto, it's $217. So Rock Auto, reliably low prices, same professionals as do-it-yourselfer, and a great selection. Go to rockauto.com, see all the parts available for your car, right Locked On and How'd You Hear About Us box, so you know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. rockauto.com. I'm a featured guest on Locked On Today. Make sure you jump aboard on Locked On Today as the daily 20-minute podcast giving you all the things you ever need in the sports world. And we jumped on Locked On today to promote the Jazz and discuss the Jazz again. So feel free to download and subscribe and follow Locked On Today and have it be a part of your programming. All right. This is geeky, but it's really important, and hopefully it'll be able to be followed. If you want to know what's different about the Jazz, it's what they're doing in the shot clock. So let me just take, it's really this incredible willingness to let it fly early. So in the first 9 seconds of the shot clock, last year the Jazz took 32% of their, or the Jazz took, yeah, the Jazz took 32% of their shots. This year they're taking, or this year they're taking 32% of their shots. Last year they took 27%. So really dramatic difference. This is going to have a bunch of like 1 and 2 and 3% differences, but that's actually a tremendous amount inside on these numbers. You're not, you don't have 10% swings. So, you know, the team that takes the most shots between 18 and 22 on the shot clock this season is at like 18%, and the team at the lowest is 9%. But if you kind of dig into the middle, everyone's between like 11 and 14%. If you take out the extremities or extremes. So we're on the first 9 seconds of the shot clock, we're taking 32% of our shots. Last year it was 27%. In the first 9 seconds of the shot clock, we're taking 17% of our three-point shots. Last year, it was 11% of our three-point shots. That's a huge change. And maybe easier number is we've gone from 12 to 15. Excuse me, we've gone from 10 to 15. That's crazy. In the first 9 seconds of the shot clock, we used to take 10. We have now taken 15 a night. We hit on 40% of these. It's actually about, we were about 38, 39 last year. But we put an incredible emphasis of just coming up the floor and letting it fly. Here's the big picture thesis that I'm going to tell you. If you look at Quinn Snyder's teams, and you go to 7 to 15 on the shot clock, in the 17-18 season, we used the most possession in the NBA in the middle of the shot clock. We were really good at it. We were the third best team in the league at in our effective field goal percentage. In 18-19, we were the third best team in the league in effective field goal percentage. We used the fourth most amount of possessions in that time. In 19-20, it dropped down a little bit. We were the eighth best, and we were the best team in the NBA in effective field goal percentage from 7 to 15 on the clock. Like, we can go all the way back to the 16-17 team. We're the fifth best team in the league in effective field goal percentage. We're like the sixth most frequent team. Quinn Snyder's basketball teams, the magic of a Quinn Snyder basketball team over the years has been this incredible half-court offensive execution that is better than anyone else in the NBA, and that when they get into their sets and they start to play advantage basketball, they're as good offensively as anyone in the league. And they sit there a lot. Even if you go to 4 to 7 on the shot clock, if you go to the 17-18 season, we were kind of about 10th or 11th. We used the second most amount of possessions in the league. From 18-19 on the clock, in 18-19, we actually stopped using as many possessions there. We got to the middle of the pack. We were like the fifth best. And in the 19-20 season, we last year, we used about the sixth most amount of possessions there. And we actually weren't, interestingly, we for the first time ever, we weren't as good. We were actually just middle of the pack. But for the general signature of a Quinn Snyder basketball team has been this remarkable ability to get into a half-court possession, play through the half-court, move the ball a ton of times, set a million picks, advantage basketball, reverse side, get good looks, and be great at it. That is still true. From 7 to 15 on the shot clock, we're shooting this year, which is the middle of the clock. We're shooting the second best effective field goal percentage at 59%. Last year in that circumstance, we were the best in the league at 57%. Last year, we used 50% of our possessions in that time period. This year, we've just slipped a little bit down to 48. But we're one of the best in the NBA once you get into the middle of the clock. We've all seen it. We understand it. We are making 41% of our threes. We're taking a few more threes. Last year we took, or this year we're taking 21 threes, and that's this. Last year we're taking, this year we're taking, we took 17. So we've upped our three rate. We're actually not shooting it all that much better. We're just taking more threes in that range. We're about as efficient, about as equal. What we've done is taken 4 percent of our possessions that used to be from 0 to 7 on the shot clock and move them to the front of the shot clock, and we've generally made them threes. And so what we have going on now, this incredible willingness to let it fly early in the shot clock without having lost the magic and beauty of a Quinn Snyder basketball team. So 32% of our possessions are now in the first 9 seconds of the shot clock, where it was 27%. We're now taking 15% of our 15 threes in that realm, where we used to be taking 10. Our effective field goal percentage in the first, from 18 to 22 on the clock, really the first 4 viable seconds, you don't get much 23 to 24, is 61% effective field goal percentage, which is as good as anyone in the NBA. It's actually like, it's not earth-shatteringly great, to be perfectly honest. Like, it's kind of about 15th in the league. We're just now using more possessions there than most teams. It's not like earth-shatteringly active for most teams in the league either, by the way. Like, if you look at our frequency rating, which is 13% of our possessions, that's middle of the pack. Our effective field goal percentage early in shot clock is middle of the pack. What's unique is we're taking 7 threes from 18 to 22 on the clock, which is the most of any team in the NBA. Only Milwaukee is close. The next quick stage, 15 to 18 on the shot clock. Again, we're not that exceptional. We're like the 7th best in the league at shooting. We're about the 6th or 7th most frequent. We're the 5th highest in 3-point shots. We're not doing anything actually exceptional. We've just moved the shot clock, those possessions earlier in the clock, and with a willingness to play at that speed and that tempo in that freedom, while still having this middle pack of the shot clock where our guys understand, all right, we didn't get the early look, now get into our game. And when this team gets into their game, they are exceptional. When you look at us from 7 to 15 on the shot clock, we are exceptional. We're the number 2 shooting team in the league behind the Brooklyn Nets. We are, in fact, better than that. That's where we truly are, an exceptional basketball team. So that shot clock study is actually the story about what the Jazz have done. They have moved with a willingness to play, kind of in an understanding, the Jazz have moved their shot clock possessions in a pretty impressive manner. Hope that makes sense. It's really geeky and really numbers based, but there's something there that's really important. If the sense of this show is to give you the insight, make it better to be a Jazz fan, have you understand what's going on with your team. So I think that hopefully that makes adds to the experience. Today's show is brought to you by my friends at Grip 6. Grip 6, the amazing Utah belt company. Once you go Grip 6, you don't go back. That's what they all say. Once you go Grip 6, you don't go back. Because once you've had the belt that does not have flaps, does not have holes, does not have bulk, and fits perfectly for you, whatever your size might be at the time, you are going to keep your belt silks. And the fact Grip 6, and the fact that it's built to wear and not to wear out, will make you even happier. Manufacture all of the products in Salt Lake, 100% of the materials are sourced in the U.S. Hands-on manufacturing approach allows us to immediate control over the manufacturing process and constantly evaluating the procedures and products. Pretty impressive. It's grip6.com. My personal favorite is the honeycomb belt. They've got a new chess series out that's kind of cool if you're into that. With the different chess pieces as your belt. They've also got the brand new socks and the belt out as well. If you're looking for something a little bit more formal when you get there, you're like, I need something formal, then do check out the carbon fiber series. That's a little more expensive and more formal and looks great. So check those out as well. I'm leaning toward picking up the silver glass belt because I just think that belt buckle is so cool. It's all at grip6.com. Promo code locked on gets you 15% off. Here again, promo code locked on. All right, let's get an update on our brief few moments of a Michelob Ultra. Who brings you the most joy? Mike Conley is at 48%, Rudy Gobert at 17%, Joe Ingles at 15%, George Niang at 20% of the vote early here in the going on And there's 48 minutes left. Well, I only gave it the Michelob Ultra poll an hour today. So Conley with the early lead on it. All right, let's get the questions. A lot of questions about the Elijah Millsap story in KSL. I don't know anything. I wasn't there. To comment would be completely irresponsible. I would, you know, Dennis has categorically denied it. Quinn Snyder says he can't fathom Dennis making such a comment. Those were the two, three people that were there. I didn't know Elijah particularly well while he was here to make any evaluation on, you know, his character or not. So, you know, I think I'll leave it at that. It would be inappropriate for me to comment. Like, I just don't know enough. And so I think we'll let this play out and see what it's going. All right, let's go to our questions on our Mailbag Thursday. Going deep, waving Shaq. Seems as though Jazz like Forrest probably comes down to them seeing something in him or ability to develop jump shot after missed jump. So I think they really do like Trent Forrest's feel for the game, and he does not shoot it well. He has not shot it well in college. I don't know that we know whether he can shoot it yet. I mean, there's time that has to be put in, and this is a hard year to put in time. I don't know that I think releasing Shaq was a statement on their belief in Trent Forrest. I think Shaq just didn't quite match and meld to what they wanted. Moreover, his guarantee date was coming up here, and if you're not certain about him, then you're better off releasing him. You actually, when you're in the luxury tax, save considerable amount of money by doing that. Nothing about Ryan Smith's ownership has been about saving money, but that's a fact. And if you're not, there's no reason to keep him. You also now have some luxury, some roster flexibility here for a little while before the trade deadline in a month if you need it. And you'd hate to sign a guaranteed contract and then have to release somebody afterwards. So, and when you're in the luxury tax, I think that's a big issue. So, you know, I think, you know, just didn't match perfectly, but it was also, there's a lot of other factors inside that aren't a criticism of Shaq. It more just the way roster is built. You saw Quinn Cook get released the other day by the Lakers. You see a lot of players getting released right now. It's kind of that time of year where that happens. Joseph Johansson says, it seems like we're getting a big shot of juice from having a crowd. I think that is true. I mean, there's no home court advantage in the league this year, and yet we haven't lost at home in a long time because we're good. But also, I do think there's a little energy in the building. You know, I talked to someone yesterday who thinks that there's a chance this, like, vaccine rollout happens, really just starts accelerating at a really, really fast rate. And if that's the case, then, you know, maybe we can fill this building up as the number one seed in the West. Like, that would be pretty great. I know the team is playing well, but is there anything the Jazz could potentially add through a trade that could address a weakness we could face in the playoffs, such as perimeter size and defense? Yeah, I mean, I think... So there's two things I think that are concerning right now. I don't know what you do about it in how you fix this in a trade deadline. I'd say there's two things to me if I'm them. One is, like, when we've seen teams have multiple wing scorers, particularly if they're big. So Ben Simmons, Tobias Harris, even Charlotte with the smaller ones with Rozier, Hayward, and Ball. We don't actually have enough defensive players for that right now. So that gets, you know, that gets a little difficult for us to handle. And so is there, you know, is there somebody we can get out there that helps Royce out? Now, you put Royce and somebody, like, if they can defend and shoot, then they're an all-star, right? So it's going to be awfully hard to go find, you know, the next Bruce Brown of Detroit, who's now on Brooklyn. And the other thing is the buyout market's going to be different this year because all these teams are close to the 10th spot. And so teams are going to be a little less willing to do it. The other one I would say is some sort of backup four. I don't know that they need to play instead of George Niang, but if George Niang or Boyan goes out, we're pretty limited pretty fast. Juwan Morgan, I guess, would be the answer there. But in a playoff series, that makes me a little nervous. I wouldn't mind someone a little more experienced. Sacramento's Nemanja Bjelica has kind of been in and out of their rotation. Like, the big name is going to be PJ Tucker, but someone's going to overpay for that. It'll be interesting to see on the buyout market what happens. Al Horford's the player that's going to change the playoff race. If Oklahoma City moves Al Horford and somebody who's on a, you know, if Dallas goes and gets Al Horford, I'd hate to see them in the first round. Like, there are teams out there, the Warriors go get Al Horford, I'd hate to see them in the playoffs. There are teams out there that are dramatically different if Al Horford ends up on the roster. That's the player to me that changes the landscape of the trade deadline of the playoff series. Still curious, what is on the laminated card that Quinn and other coaches reference throughout the game? So Quinn usually has all, if this is the card, I think it is, has all of the out of timeouts plays pre-planned before the game starts. Now they'll make changes, but he has all of his out of timeout plays set. They're either trying to learn something, they know who their personnel is going to be, they know who their personnel is going to be. And so those are all usually preset before the night starts. And he has those on a card in that fashion. The other thing is he also has like just a football playing set. So, you know, certain they have different their offensive play calls are in different sequences. They'll be a this series and a this series and a this series and a this series. I don't want to get into it because I don't want to reveal anything. So he might know on a given night we're running a lot of X series and another we're running a lot of Y series and another thing we're running a lot of ear series. Those aren't plays. And so when you know you're doing that, then you end up with those set play calls on your chart just to look at. Do you think we'll have a full arena by the playoffs? Such a great season. Vivint would be rocking. Can you imagine the intensity of the packed house? I joked last night on the air with a little tongue in cheek that we could finally get all of Utah to wear masks. If we told them that if you wear masks and we get our numbers low enough, we can fill the arena for the playoffs. Like the Utah Jazz are the ultimate bonder, right? All political issues, all issues about masks would go away. Like if it's for the Jazz, we'd all be willing to do it without any question and any dispute or any debate because it's for the Jazz. And that is like, doesn't matter if you're a Utah Cougar, a mask, non-masker, whatever, We all come together for the Jazz in this town. So maybe, who knows? It'd be kind of funny if we that was our new ad campaign. David Smith, actually, who's great, been with us for the very beginning. I feel like we're good friends. Just tweeted me on the thoughts of Niang versus Bertans comps, which is an interesting thing. I mean, Bertans has had this breakout year in Washington and Niang sitting a lot of the same numbers. Bertans is a little bigger, I think a little bit more athletic and can play a few more minutes, but I'm not totally sure. But Georgia's defense has been really, really quite awesome along the way. All right, that wraps us up. That is Locked On Jazz. We'll be back with you Friday. We're on the road, right? Do we play? I don't even know what we do. We play Friday in Miami. So team travels today, plays tomorrow in Miami. Miami-Orlando back-to-back, then New Orleans and Washington, Philadelphia to wrap it up. Before the All-Star break, four more before we get a long extended break on the second half of the season. All right, talk to you soon. Locked On Today is your daily podcast on all the sports news you need in 20 minutes. Go to Locked On Today right now. Tell your smart device to play the most recent episode of podcast Locked On Today.